Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. My name is Lisa Woodruff, and I'm a professional organizer and blogger in Cincinnati, Ohio. I want to help you get your home organized and help you organize life stages and unexpected events. So sit back, relax, and let's get organized. Well, today I have another weighty podcast for you, and this one is about the challenges of organizing special needs children. And specifically today, I'm going to talk a lot about the invisible disabilities that the family knows exist, but others on the outside either don't know exist or don't completely understand and can't empathize with and really think it's bad parenting when it's not bad parenting. And so how that really wears on the parents and the family and the organizational structure of the home. And I know I'm going to hit a lot of you today, because if you take just the diagnoses of asthma, allergies, ADHD, and autism, you hit one out of every two children in the United States. And that statistic was from 2008. So pretty much when I think of my family and friends, I can think of a handful of families that don't have one child with some kind of special need. Now, that could be as severe as cerebral palsy and Down syndrome, or as mild as mild ADHD. But there's something there that they are constantly battling and usually has an impact on the organization of the home. So the original name of this post when I published it the first time was The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly of Why Houses Get Cluttered. And the reason I wrote this post a couple of years ago and I'm republishing it again today was because in Cincinnati, Fox 19 and I teamed up and we organized a family's kitchen on air. It was one of the most fun things I've ever done. But the family that we chose had five children and four of them had special needs. And it was working with this client in such a public manner, and she was just so public about sharing her story and just the desperate help that she needed. I could see from my own experience, hers and some of my other clients, a couple of commonalities that if you are not dealing with children with special needs, you don't realize is happening behind closed doors. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about this post, a little bit about stories of people I've worked with. And at the end, I'm going to actually read the post to you because I think it'll be impactful. So I want to talk about kind of what I see the five stages of what happens in a family that has children with special needs. So the first one is no one chooses or causes a child's disability. And the reason I say that first is because myself and other clients that I've worked with, when there's something that happens to your child that you don't have control over, you spend a lot of time in denial, trying to figure out what you can do so that you could get the disability to go away, or you can mitigate it, or you can work around it, because you don't want it to be there. And you can't imagine that it's going to be there for the rest of your life. So no one chooses to have a child born with Down syndrome, and no one causes a child to become bipolar. I mean, those things don't, you can't do that. You're powerful, but you're not that powerful. And so the first thing that happens with the parents who are raising children with disabilities is they have to come to terms with the fact that they didn't cause this and they can't necessarily cure it. They can come up with workarounds and strategies and things that'll work for this child, but they can't necessarily make it as if it never happened before. And that is really, really hard for a parent. And some parents spend very little time in this stage, and some parents spend their entire lives in this stage. And then I see that people go to stage two. Parents of children with these invisible disabilities. So the rest of this I'm going to talk about are the invisible disabilities. I'm talking about learning disabilities, ADHD, mood disorders, things that are diagnosed, but you know, medical community is always saying like, depression is overdiagnosed. Like, you know, I've already done the post about I was depressed. Well, I was depressed and clearly suicidal. And I mean to tell you, it was underdiagnosed. In my case, I had to force to get the diagnosis for myself. And when you're dealing with any of these invisible Disabilities, they're almost always emotional and mental. They aren't things that you could do a blood test for, and they aren't cut and dry, and they're very individualized. And not only are they individualized, but there's no one treatment plan that works. Like, I had asthma, my son had asthma. You have like three choices of your asthma medicine. You have the cheap one that works really well, which I can't remember the name of that one. And then there's albuterol and Zopanex. That's it. Albuterol and Zopanex. They both work to open the airways so that you can breathe. But Zopanex, extremely more expensive, but it doesn't have any free radicals. So the kid isn't as hyper, which is hugely important when you're doing four breathing treatments a day. This is something that you can logically, concretely talk to people about. Asthma is understood. The child is not breathing. The oxygen level is lower. We give this one or two medicines to all the people with asthma, and it works in 99.9% of the people, right? Like, it's not like, well, albuterol works in some cases and not in others. No, it like almost always works. But when you're dealing with ADHD, when you're dealing with autism, when you're dealing with depression, when you're dealing with bipolar, it doesn't always work. As a matter of fact, you can give a medication to one child that makes them completely worse for a long, long period of time. And it doesn't work immediately. You have to be on these medicines a long period of time. And often you need a bunch of different medicines in conjunction to make this special little cocktail that works for just that person. Okay, so clearly I have issues with this. So all of this to say, number two, parents of children with these invisible disabilities are constantly fighting. They're fighting to get what their child needs at school on the IEP because the teacher says, oh, the kid's just lazy. They're not applying themselves. Or if they would stop talking, they would be able to do this. They have a medically diagnosed ADHD diagnosis. I don't think they're talking voluntarily. You know what I mean? But it's really, really hard if you haven't lived with a child with ADHD or learning disabilities to know what that even looks like. They're fighting for insurance coverage, for medicine, and just to have even diagnoses covered sometimes. And they are fighting like crazy to keep their marriages together. The divorce rates of parents with special needs children is 86%. And that statistic is old too. If you look around at the single men and women out there raising children, a lot of them have special needs children, and it was the focus they had on those children that caused them not to have enough time to focus on the marriage or disagreements in how to deal with that child's disability and denial that often wreaks havoc on a marriage. They're also fighting their extended family's expectations of their grandchildren because they don't want to believe the bad. They don't want to believe that this disability is not going to go away, or even that there is a disability at all. So while the parents stay in denial for a while, grandparents could stay in denial forever. And they're fighting for their kids to have friends. Scratch that. They're fighting for their kids to have a friend. Any friend, just one will do. These kids don't have very many friends. And they are fighting for the future. They don't know what the future is going to look like because they don't have any friends who have raised children with these disabilities, but they know they have to just keep fighting to give their kids the best future they possibly can. Which leads to number three, which is they're scared. These parents are scared. Invisible disabilities are invisible to the stranger on the street, but they're screaming to the parents at home. And you're scared. You're scared you won't have enough. You won't be enough. You won't live long enough to see this child through to self-reliance or to be able to provide for the child's future, all while struggling to stay afloat as a parent. So then you get to number four, where these parents are eventually depressed. It's just too much for one person. It's too much to constantly have to explain and defend your child when you just want someone to come alongside you and say, it'll be okay, to listen without offering a solution and to help where they can. But people don't. I used to think it was because they didn't understand how badly the parents of children with invisible disabilities needed the help or an ear. But I think the real reason that so many families don't help is because they are dealing with their own children with invisible disabilities. I would say if people would open up and we were sitting with 10 moms around a table, I would venture to guess 6 to 7 moms at that table would be experiencing the same thing, but they're pretending that they're not. So this leads to number five, This is where I find most of these people are. They retreat to their homes and they stay there. It's too hard to be out with these kids anyway. The kids like the routine and the comfort of home, and so they just go home and they feed the kid what they want, and the child throws another tantrum, and at least only the parents have to deal with it. Nobody else does. They don't have to deal with the judging. They don't have to deal with the leaving an event. You know, they don't have to deal with the embarrassment. At least they're in the comfortable environment where they can deal with it. And I list on the blog some of the things that these parents do that are not normal, but are reality, and it's their reality. And I know that's a lot. Like, I know I'm dumping a lot on you, but I want to write what I had at the end of the post, which says, if this is you, so if you're listening to this podcast and this is you, you're probably crying because I'm almost crying. And I want to say, I understand. And you are an amazing parent with an amazing gift and a beautiful child who is a blessing from God. And I generally address mothers on this topic, but I know full well that there are dads at home trying to cope just as much as there are moms. I don't have any answers except for you to trust your mama or daddy gut and do what's best for you and your kids. And if this is you, don't forget to treat yourself too. Put on your oxygen mask so that you can help your kids. For many, antidepressants are warranted and take them. And for others, it's time to take back your home. Let them tantrum, sleep anywhere, and bounce around, and we're going to start to take back the organization of your home, even if it's just one space. This is what I keep hearing from you guys in the voicemails and emails, is that, oh my gosh, you'd never be able to organize my house. First of all, yes, I would, and I would love to, but that's not the point. The point is, you can't see it organized because it's been so long and it's been so hard, and you've gotten to such a place of disorganization in your mind, in your emotions, in your family, that you just can't even imagine what it would be like if it was organized again, right? Like, you can't even, like, whoop-de-doo if I go clean out the silverware drawer. Like, that is not going to help me make sure that my kid graduates from high school. But it will make you feel better because it's something you have control over. So maybe don't pick the silverware drawer, but pick something that nobody else in the house is going to mess up. There has to be one little area that's just yours, even if it's your nightstand drawer. I can't tell you how many times I would go in my bedroom and just organize my nightstand. I know it's crazy. I think that's also why I would organize the storage room a lot, was because I could go down in the basement in the storage room and shut the door, and you pretty much couldn't hear anything that was going on in the house, except I was surrounded by all of this clutter. But I was able to say, oh my gosh, we've had this for 10 years. I can get rid of this. I can organize that. I can put all this together. And nobody cared what I did down there. Nobody cared what I was getting rid of. So I got that alone time. I got to get something organized. I got to declutter things, which it feels really good to get rid of things that you don't need or want anymore. And I felt like I could control the storage room. And for every 6 months, I would just keep going down and organizing the storage room. Like, when I would get really stressed, I would organize the storage room. So here's a funny story. When my father was dying, it was a couple of months before he died, and I had been power of attorney for a year, and everything was falling apart in our family and everywhere around the world. And we had flown out to California to see him, and we'd flown home. We like landed. We hadn't even unpacked the car. And I come into our kitchen and I start ripping the shelves out of the pantry because we had wire shelving. And what I wanted to have was wooden shelving in my pantry. So I had figured out that if I took all of the wire shelving out, that I could paint the inside of the pantry, and then somehow I could get a wooden bookshelf in there, and that would give me wooden shelves. Never mind the fact that the wooden shelves would be way shorter than what I was used to, that the bookshelf wouldn't fit in there, all those things. That didn't matter at all. So I remember this so vividly. So my husband comes in. I think he brought the suitcases in and left them at the front of the house. The football game was on. He cracks open a beer. He starts watching the football game. And I'm literally, there's food everywhere because I pulled it all out of the pantry. And I'm ripping down shelving. And then I decide, in the middle of this, that I really want to have a ledge over my kitchen sink that I could put a Yankee candle on. So I need a bigger windowsill. So I go get the sledgehammer and I start sledgehammering the window ledge thing, like where the window comes together. I just take it off the wall. And my husband comes in to get another beer and he goes, what are you doing? And I said, I want to put a Yankee Candle here. He goes, all right. He goes back in the other room because there was no stopping me. I mean, I was so out of control in every area of my life that I was going to redo this window ledge. No, I had no idea how to do that. Not one. It was very redneck. It's a good thing we redid our kitchen years later because we lost a lot of air through that window ledge that I did. So I took it off the wall and I went into Home Depot and I was like, this, I need to replace this. I need it this thickness and this length. And by that night, I did. I had a new window ledge up that needed to be painted, and I had gotten that bookshelf into that closet. I still don't know how I did it because it didn't really fit. I had to take it apart and put it together inside of the pantry, but you couldn't reach the side. So the one side wasn't screwed in because I couldn't get screws in there. I mean, it was such a mess. But it's what I had to do because my whole life at that point was falling apart, except for my marriage. Everything was crashing around me. So I ripped apart my pantry. So this may not be you, but it may be you. Find an area. Another area I really dove into was my laundry room. I organized that room probably 6 or 7 times before I got it the way I wanted it. I added shelving. I re-wallpapered it. I took the wallpaper down. I painted it. I put up pictures. I did all kinds of things in this little laundry room, which is a nice wondering, but it's not, you know, like I was redoing our whole house or anything. I spent so much time on that, but it was little amounts of money and little amounts of time. And every time I was like, yes, I like this because it has bright yellow wallpaper in here and I feel sunny. And about 2 years later, I realized that was ridiculous. And I painted it some other color, but nobody cared. Greg didn't care that I painted the laundry room bright yellow and whatever else I was doing in there. So find an area of your house that's driving you crazy and take all of your frustration out on that area of the house. Go through and just get rid of stuff and organize and see if it doesn't make you feel better. And then as you do these areas, your nightstand drawer and maybe your pantry and your laundry room and your storage room, it's going to start to snowball because these areas are going to stay organized because your kids are not going to mess them up. It's going to give you a little bit of traction. So I hope that that gave you a little insight into what the parents of children with special needs, how they're feeling, some of the stages I've noticed that they go through, maybe some ways that you can tackle it yourself, make you feel more organized. And as I move forward with Organized 365, you know, I've said there are only so many closet posts you can write, and there are only so many organizational supplies you can buy. But understanding why we get unorganized and how to get organized again, but more giving validity to the fact that life is not, you know, this straight continuum. It is peaks and valleys and all of these different things that we go through in life that are part of our journey. And as we're in these different, you know, valleys of our life, our house shows it. Like when you're depressed, when your family is going through extra, you know, trials, when your children have special needs, when you're going through a depression, when you or your spouse lose your job or someone gets sick, the first thing to happen is the house gets unorganized, as it should, because there are other things that are more important in life than an organized house. But what happens is the disorganization of the house then starts to become part of the problem as you start to come up out of that valley and into a level area, or you're going into a peak where you're in a real high and you look around and you go, who made this big mess? Like, oh my gosh, where did this come from? And how am I going to get it organized again? So I'm hoping every time you listen to a podcast, you just get one little nugget that you could go and say, fine, I'm going to do the nightstand drawer today. Or I, you know, in the wintertime when the kids have a snow day and they're driving me crazy, I'm going to pretend they're at school and I'm going to go spend that time in the storage room and I'm going to organize it and just start to take your house back one day at a time.